Coming to you from the Early Childhood Peace Consortium at ecdpeace.org, this is Pathways to Peace. Listen in as we talk with experts about the experiences and the challenges they face implementing early childhood development programs to build a more peaceful world. In this podcast, we discuss how positive early childhood development can lead to global peace. Support comes from the Mother-Child Education Foundation, the John E. Fetzer Institute, UNICEF, and Yale University. I'm Frank Boudin, Yale undergraduate and interviewer for the Early Childhood Peacebuilding Consortium online platform. Today, we'll be speaking with Dr. Kaveh Kushnut, an esteemed Yale professor who is the Director of Undergraduate Studies at the School of Public Health. He is also an epidemiologist with decades of experience, dealing in particular with HIV prevention research, and he's currently working on a parenting intervention with Palestinian refugees that's of particular interest to us. So, Kaveh, why do you have an interest in the topic of violent conflict and early childhood health and development?
Hi, Frank. My interest in the topic really comes out of my own sort of personal background. I was born in Iran, and when I was a teenager, there was a revolution against the Shah, and he was toppled, and the Islamic Republic came to power. And shortly after that, the war between Iran and Iraq began, the bloody eight-year war from 1980 to 1988. Although I was too young to be sort of involved in the war, but I saw the devastation that the war causes. I lost cousins. I saw the damage to infrastructure. Mm-hmm. I saw people fleeing. And that impacted me as a teenager. So I left Iran. I was fortunate to be able to come to the States and stay with my uncle in Florida and continue my education here. So that early experience stayed with me. And when I, became a professor at the School of Public Health, I started thinking about what is our role in prevention of conflict, violent conflict around the world. And it was sort of that, an attempt to answer that question that got me involved in some teaching and some research that I'm doing now.
All right. So what exactly do you think is the role of public health professionals in the prevention of conflict with a particular emphasis on children and families?
Yeah. If you think about it, public health, the goal of public health is prevention. The entire profession can be summarized in prevention. That's what we try to do, whether it's drug addiction, whether it's HIV/AIDS, whether it's asthma, or in this case, violence. So there ought to be a role for us. When it comes to violence, the World Health Organization divides violence into three categories. Self-directed, so you can think of suicide as an extreme form of that. Interpersonal violence, family violence, domestic violence, those kinds of issues. And then this third category is called collective violence, and this is basically where groups of individuals in an organized fashion commit acts of violence against other groups, but they're doing it not randomly. They're doing it for very specific economic, political, social objectives. So in this large category of collective violence, war resides, civil conflict resides. And I was asking myself, what is it that we can do when it comes to collective violence? Because in terms of the first two categories, self-directed and interpersonal violence, I feel like there is some movement, there is some research. There are interventions that have been attempted and evaluated. But when it comes to collective violence, I see almost the silence around it. When I looked around in our own School of Public Health, there wasn't a single course that dealt with this topic. And I actually started looking at other schools of public health, and with a few exceptions, there really wasn't a focus on prevention of violent conflict. Right. So I was, in 2013, I had an opportunity to take a sabbatical, kind of a leave from my regular teaching administrative duties. And I decided to return to the Middle East, and I had some connections with the American University of Beirut and Lebanon. And I knew that given their location, you know, there are surrounded by refugees. You may know that now, you know, one out of every four person in Lebanon actually is a refugee from Syria, which is astonishing. It would be something like the equivalent of 70 to 80 million refugees coming to the United States over the course of a couple of years. So I went there to see what the public health community, the public health academics at the American University of Beirut were doing in terms of teaching, in terms of research, involvement in the field. And I learned a great deal. I met some fantastic colleagues who I'm still in touch with for the last couple of years. And I began to take some action. So the first thing I did was, during that sabbatical year, I developed a course. And that's the course that I'm teaching now on conflict and health, and try to really articulate the role of epidemiology and public health professionals. That course, which there is some involvement from colleagues at the American University of Beirut, they participate in the course through video conferencing. That's been going on. I taught it last year. I'm teaching it again. And I've started to get involved in collaborative research projects, again, with colleagues in Lebanon and other places. So when we think about prevention in public health, we often categorize it in terms of primary, secondary, and tertiary prevention. So primary prevention would be efforts that are intended to prevent something bad from happening in the first place. So if we can immunize children against polio so they don't get polio at all, obviously that's the best thing to do. So with infectious disease, we have some tools, vaccines in particular. When it comes to a more of a socially constructed problem, such as a conflict, where it has social, political, economic, environmental sometimes determinants, primary prevention is much more challenging, complicated, messy, because you have to think about all the root causes of conflict and think about how you can address them. Those are the kinds of efforts I feel our political science colleagues are much more skilled in sort of addressing. When it comes to secondary prevention, which is basically the space where bad things have already started, using the infectious disease model, you have some cases of, let's say, Ebola or Zika virus these days, and then you try to contain it. So that will be secondary prevention, where you try to prevent further spread. When it comes to violence, we could look at it the same way. We could basically ask, once conflict erupts, how can we contain it? Are there strategies that could be utilized to reduce its negative impact? And there are things we can do. Tertiary prevention is more about rehabilitation, reintegration, rebuilding. So think about child soldiers. And once the hostilities end, these child soldiers need a long process of rehabilitation so they don't go back into, you know, recommitting acts of violence. That would be sort of a tertiary prevention. So those are the three kind of large categories of prevention. As I mentioned before, I feel secondary prevention is where a lot of the public health community has been focused on. I'd like us to move more towards primary prevention, but in doing so, we need support from other colleagues from political science, law, history, and others who can help us understand these root causes. Yeah.
So in order to address the sorts of issues that you saw in Lebanon, could you describe the parenting intervention that your research group is working on? What are some of the main challenges in evaluating programs that involve young children in refugee settings?
Sure. So I had an opportunity to get involved in a project that's led by my good friend and colleague, Jim Leckman, at the Yale Child Study Center. And that project is a parenting intervention. It's for mothers and young children, preschool age, who don't have access to, you know, regular preschool education training, which we know benefits mothers and children for decades to come. So there has been good, solid evidence showing these parenting interventions work well. However, these interventions have never been implemented and rigorously evaluated in a fragile setting such as a refugee camp. So we were able to partner with colleagues in Lebanon, in particular Arab Resource Collective, which is an NGO that has a long-standing presence in Lebanon, working both with the Lebanese population but also with refugees. They've been working with the Palestinian refugees who have been in Lebanon for decades, and they are now also working with the more recently arrivals, Syrians. Some also are Palestinian origin and some are Syrian nationals. So this particular intervention that we are in midst of is a 25-week long intervention focused again on mothers and their young children. We are implementing and evaluating this in two Palestinian refugee camps and one sort of a community center for low-income Lebanese population. And the idea is to implement it in a randomized fashion, which is very challenging. And due to ethical consideration, we are not doing a placebo-controlled study. And the way we've structured it, organized it, is a what we call a wait list control. So one group of mothers and their young children would get the intervention. And then 25 weeks later, we move on and offer the same intervention to the wait list control. And we do a kind of a baseline and an end line evaluation to see if there are changes in some outcomes, both mother's outcome, but also children's outcome, in terms of readiness for school, all sorts of sort of cognitive functions. But also we're looking at things like how parents discipline their children, the extent to which violence is used or physical force is used. So it's a very sort of quantitative study. We decided early on that given the complicated context of the refugee camp, there's so much going on, it will be a missed opportunity if we don't also collect some qualitative data, which helps us understand the environment within which this particular intervention is being implemented. So we have a modest qualitative data collection component, which includes interviewing the directors of these camps, the centers that are operating these camps, doing focus group interviews with the mothers before they start the program and when they complete it, just to try to get a sense of some of the environmental factors. And perhaps not surprisingly, we are learning a lot of really interesting information that I think we would have missed if we didn't do those kinds of qualitative interviews. So I'm happy to talk to you about some of those.
Right. Do you want to describe one of those qualitative interventions?
So one of the things we learned early on is, although this program was intended for Palestinian refugees who have been there for a long time, multi-generation, there are a lot of new arrivals from Syria of Palestinian origin. So these are basically Palestinians who were uprooted from their homes, moved to Syria, established homes there, and because of the civil conflict in Syria, had to move once again, and this time they came to Lebanon, and they went to the very same refugee camps that are already overcrowded with Palestinians who have been there since 1948. So it's created a lot of tensions. You have extreme overcrowding, and I have walked through some of these camps, and you could have a one or two bedroom house which already has, let's say, seven or eight people in it, and now you have another family come from Syria. Complicates things. There's just a very real kind of constraint on resources, basic necessities of life. So it's created a lot of tension. Although the Palestinians who've been living in Lebanon would like to be welcoming, but they have very, very limited resources themselves. So there are tensions. And as a result, we decided we couldn't only offer the intervention to Palestinian mothers from Lebanon, we had to also offer it to some of the newly arrivals from Syria. Also, there's been, you know, several very unfortunate incidents. There's been a couple of bombings. As a matter of fact, right before the Paris bombing, there was a pair of suicide bombing right at the entrance of one of these camps that we work in. And we're extremely concerned about the safety of the residents of the camp and also the staff that we work with. And in fact, the work had to sort of come to a halt for a couple of weeks. We reassessed the situation and see if it's safe enough to go back into the camps. This is on top of their infrastructure problems. Electricity is in extreme shortage in Lebanon. So you may have you know, only a few hours of electricity in a day. In fact, there's some sort of creativity around this where people have apps where they can sort of know when electricity is on and when it's off. So the staff that we work with, our colleagues in Lebanon, had to deal with some real constraints in terms of just electricity, transportation, getting to places, personal safety issues. So implementing a rigorous scientific study in a context like that, you're constantly sort of challenged. You just don't have the luxury of relying on, you know, predictable electricity. Things are not going to work the way you like. So regardless, the work is going forward. It's to me, it's almost miraculous. And the only reason I think the project is moving forward is because of the commitment of the staff and our colleagues in Lebanon who are very much committed to this work and are and see it as one of the few positive things they're able to provide to these families.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like a very difficult series of problems you guys have to deal with, but it's great that you're making progress.
Thank you.
All right, well, I want to thank you for speaking with us today, Kaveh. It's been wonderful, and the information you provided us was great. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Pathways to Peace. If you enjoyed this episode, you can help other people find the show by giving it a rating on iTunes and sharing it with friends. Theme song is To the Sun by Lost Harmonies. Pathways to Peace is a production of the Early Childhood Peace Consortium. Visit us at ecdpeace.org to learn more about our work and how you can join this global movement.